G'day, I'm Willie Miller.
Hi, I'm Seb Coe.
I'm Heather Matthews.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Agnew.
Hi, it's Grant Hackett here.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Spoon from the Wallaroos.
I'm Azuma Nelson.
I'm Gashini, and you're listening to Not the Footish.
Yes, you are indeed listening to another podcast of Not the Footy Show. Apologies, it's been a little while between shows, but I was away again, and then we had a bit of trouble tracking down a time we could talk to our guest, and we do have a very special guest. In fact, two of them on this show. One has been on before, but the other is a newbie, and that is Jane Fleming, the president of Australian Athletics. It's been rebranded, of course. I keep getting confused about that one. But Jane Fleming, of course, heptathlete at the 88 and 92 Olympic Games, and is now the president of Australian Athletics. And Brian Miller, who's the vice president, they join us just to talk about this upsurge suddenly in how the athletes are performing and also how interest is growing as well around the sport. Anyway, I'm Ashley Morrison.
And I'm John Lee.
John, good to be back.
Yes. You're back from your many travels again.
I know. Well, it was the wife's birthday this time, so we went to South Africa to see her family.
I did see the social media photos. Looks like you had a good time.
Yeah, the zip line I did in Mossel Bay, the longest one over the ocean. That was quite an experience.
And you also followed up on some of the content from your documentary.
Yes, we did indeed, yeah, from Mark Our Place. Yeah, the three rugby players.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to Middelburg to the place where the concentration camp that Robert Johnson ran, and the cemetery there. And it was actually, it was incredibly moving when you sort of saw how many children there were, graves for children there. And that was meant to be one of the better, concentration camps in that it actually had the most doctors there, whereas most of them only had one. I think they had three. But yeah, very, very sad. We also went to the rugby and watched the Blue Bulls play, which was
Oh, that
really
would
good.
Have made the missus happy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, she was happy with that. Yeah, I was sat next to a guy who was, I actually asked him how tall he was, and he was 7 foot.
So you come up to his waist or something?
Yeah, I was not much higher than that. Someone took a photograph of the two of us standing from behind.
Is that Laurel and Hardy sort of stuff?
Well, yeah. He was Laurel and I'm a little chubby Hardy.
Yeah. Well, are you going to get us going?
Okay, I suppose so. I think
we might even be contemporary.
We might be because obviously the announcement was made here in Western Australia in the past week that in 2027 we are officially going to have a team in the National Rugby League competition or the Australia. Is it Australian Rugby League or National Rugby League? It's National NRL, yeah. ARL was the old one, isn't it? Yeah. And they're going to be called the Perth Bears, which they're sort of taking over the name from the North Sydney Bears. And I'm concerned about that. I think it's great that Rugby League is coming to Western Australia, that we're finally going to have a team. Well, you know, we've talked to John Saxon so many times, and he was pushing and pushing and pushing. And I think he is a really good operator. So it's just reward for him, and hopefully he will be still involved. But I just wonder about taking a team that already exists and kind of relocating it. Perth people are very parochial. And I think the Rugby League fans will get behind it because they love to have the Rugby League here. But I just don't know about that side of things of trying to bring in a brand that already exists into a new market.
Well, if you think about it from the other way, it's obvious that a lot of the people that have a connection to North Sydney, the old Bears, are thrilled with this news.
Yeah.
They seem
But are they
to
all going to
really
migrate
happy.
Across the country and come and live here?
No, but it...
They will go and support them when they're playing over East, obviously.
Yeah, they will. And they'll become members, probably, some of them. And so at least there's a base to begin from.
Yeah, and there's merit in that because, yeah, obviously they will then have support when they're on the East Coast. The only problem is, obviously, a lot of those clubs will benefit from them drinking the beer, eating the pies, and getting a ticket, unless they are, as you say, members, and they get members' tickets on the far side, on the other side of the country.
It'll depend on how they break up their season. You know, will there potentially be Bears home games on the East Coast? Which is probably an idea they should think about.
which would,
once a year for a retro round, North Sydney Oval, bang.
Oh, come on, John. We hate these retro rounds. Let's name it. It's just a league season. Please, just play. Stop naming every round something.
What are they going to? There's an idea.
Well, then they must wear the retro kit as well, like the shorts when they were really long and all.
That all of them have to wear a headband.
Yeah. And a mullet.
I think there's a lot of room for success here, because given that if you look at who's the membership of the Western Force, yeah, there are some local, but there's a lot of members of the Western Force that are, what you'd inverted commas, immigrants.
Yep.
You know, they've come over from work. A lot of islanders are over here for work.
South Africans, New Zealanders, English.
And I don't think they're going to carry that, parochialism? Yeah, that's the one. I don't think they're going to carry that with them necessarily. So for them, there's not this, oh, that's an Eastern States thing. It's just, oh, we're going to have
I think there is a strong rugby league interest here, again, from Northern English people as well, will be over the moon that they can finally watch the sport that they used to watch in the UK here in their own backyard. I think, John, is I went many years ago, and I was telling someone this yesterday, to the launch of the Perth Pirates, which was what the name was going to be when they were bidding to be in the NRL before. The interesting thing is I've still got, I think, the hat that we got at the launch. I've still got the rugby ball, which has the Perth Pirates logo on it. So I just sort of, I don't know.
Collector's item.
Yeah, I think it will be now. But what you think is, you know, obviously there was a lot of thought had gone into that branding. There was a lot of processes to doing that. And then that's almost now being pushed to one side. And this is seen as the better option.
That possibly is a better option than, I don't like the Pirates as a name, full stop.
I'm not a big fan of the Bears either, to be honest.
At least it's a traditional thing. I mean, they're, you know, it's not something made up. Like, there is something, there is a culture attached to it, or there is a history attached to it. We have talked about the Perth Glory, keeping the Perth Glory name in the new thing, and that. Did that work for them? I don't know that it particularly
hasn't so far.
No. They're gonna have all the problems any expansion team is going to have. You got to build a roster. You got to find coaches. You got to build a backroom staff. Where do you play? Blah, blah. All of those issues are going to be there.
And you've got to market the team.
Yes. Well, at the NRL are pretty good at that.
I think they're exceptional at it.
Yeah.
You know?
I really do think they're serious about it, and they'll plough money into it.
And this is where I don't think
they want this to fail.
Yeah. And this is where you've got to say, how much will this impact on the Perth Glory and the Western Force? Because I think it will have an impact, because there'll be people who I know are from the north of England who, yeah, there's not a rugby league team, so they've gone to the Glory games because it's close to, you know, they'll now probably drop their Glory membership and go to the NRL.
Yeah, and look, Volandis is a bit of a showman, and this is part of being able to call it the NRL and being able to give the middle finger back to the other code. Oh, see, we are a national team. Get stuffed. There's a lot of that, bit of that going on.
Oh, there's a lot of that going on at the moment. Yeah.
And he loves a headline. So I think the future's reasonably bright for them.
And the other thing I think that it opens up, and this might sound like a crazy idea now, but if you're going to bring, say, British clubs over for exhibition games, you play a British club plays against the Bears here in Western Australia, where 42% of the population are first or second generation British, you're going to get a good crowd, because they're going to turn out to see the team from the UK. So there are, again, huge opportunities there to be seized upon. I just hope they don't do a stupid idea and decide, oh, we'll try and fill Optus Stadium and we'll go and play it there. You've got to play it in a rectangular stadium where rectangular sport belongs.
So we assume that's HBF Park.
Yeah.
What I did find interesting was Mr. Volandi's comments that perhaps they could share players with the Western Force. Ooh.
Yeah, I don't think the true blue rugby union fans would like that very much, because they tend to look down their nose at league.
They do, and there's
although they do love to poach a league player, don't they?
Well, they don't mind it. Yes, there's a couple of current Wallabies that started out as
leagues. There's been quite a few, yeah. It's...
Well, a lot of these guys start out as juniors anyway, playing both. You know, so they're not, it's not as if they've been poached. They just decide to have a crack at this.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's, depends on what is the number behind the dollar sign that's being offered.
Yeah, there is that.
And of course, I think there is, without being derogatory towards rugby league, their World Cup, I don't think carries quite as much kudos as the Rugby Union World Cup, because there are not as many strong nations in that competition as there are in the Union one.
I think it's getting better though.
It is.
Judging by the last two Rugby League World Cups, I mean, you've seen the rise of teams like Fiji and Tonga and that, you know, aren't quite going to win it yet, but who's to say they're getting a Rugby League team?
Yeah.
15 years time, maybe they...
Well, I think less than that with them. I think their handling skills are so superb that if they get it right and they click, they're going to be really exciting.
Hi, I'm Seb Coe, and you're listening to Not The Footy Show.
Well, as I said at the top of the show, we've got a very special guest, or guests, joining us again. Brian Miller, Vice President of Australian Athletics. I think I call it Athletics Australia still at one point in the interview. And the President of Australian Athletics, Jane Fleming, are joining us now to talk about basically how the movement with athletics in Australia is really making progress and how it's growing interest-wise and support-wise, and they're getting results. Brian Miller and Jane Fleming, welcome to Not The Footy Show.
I love the name of your podcast. That's fantastic. We are definitely not the footy.
Absolutely. Well, we felt that dominated the media in this country, and we needed to be something that was clearly not.
Love it.
Now, just Jane, obviously, just to talk about you just before we get into, obviously, the athletics world you're involved in these days as President of Athletics Australia. I was thinking it must have been quite different for you because you, or whether there was any difference, because, you know, when you first Olympic Games 1988, it was the end of the amateur era. 1992 was supposedly the start of the professional, but I'm sure you didn't see much difference.
I love how you say the years. I no longer say the years when I'm talking about Olympics. I only say the cities. So I was at Seoul and Barcelona. It ages me way too much. Look, I did live through that amateur year. I remember having to have a trust fund for the very little amount of money that we may have had. And it used to go through what was referred to as the Amateur Athletic Union of Australia. So I'm really showing my dinosaur age with that organisation. But, yeah, I did. And then, of course, it did become, you know, then that was just basically open slather. You could earn an income from the sport at certain levels. And it certainly wasn't a given if you even made an Olympic team that you would earn any money at all from the sport. I was kind of lucky enough in the late 80s and early 90s when I don't even know how I knew to do this, but I kind of understood naturally understood some marketing and the likes and ended up with a number of sponsors that I ended up making an income doing something I'd do for free. And what an amazing way to live your 20s.
No, absolutely. But, I mean, things haven't really changed today, have they? Unless you're at the very, very top, you're not going to make the big bucks, are you?
No, and indeed, if I think back, there was probably athletes in the 80s, certainly, and in the 90s in Australia in the lead up to the Sydney Olympic Games, where we probably made more money than what the athletes are making nowadays. And that's not even taking inflation into account. I think if anything, there's more government support nowadays, but perhaps in some senses, other than the sporting organisations, the sporting brands, then maybe even less commercial support for individuals within sport, particularly if you're not in the footy codes or in the professional codes. So it does make it tough. But there are other forms of currency that we get paid back in, which are really incredible. Travelling around the world with a group of like-minded young people having the time of your life certainly is one of those currencies.
I'm sure it is. But now you're putting back into the sport that you obviously are known for and you absolutely love. And we caught up with Brian after the Olympic Games And I mean, it's a good time for Athletics Australia. It seems like you're on the right path. You're getting results. Athletes are coming through. But of course, the hard thing is maintaining that and sustaining it.
Yes, it is. Although having a home Olympic Games in 7 years' time in Brisbane is certainly a better environment with which to try and sustain it than had if we were in a different circumstances with away Olympic Games. So I think that really helps. I think we're quite a, I should say, contemporary sport, even though we have centuries and centuries of history, but a contemporary sport in a sense that both women and men participate in our sport at the same time, in the same events, at the same venues for the same prize money. And I think that's attractive to parents for teenagers when they're training with both sexes. And I think it's a really fun and attractive way to participate in sport at the elite level as well. And actually, I have to say, even at the club level as a teenager, I trained in a squad of people ranging probably from 12 to 50, both men and women and boys and girls. And it was really part of what certainly kept me going through those teen years. And I think it's quite different to a lot of team sports where they're very isolated and it's just one sex. And we have that opportunity to have that really healthy, fantastic way of growing through your teens and being physically active and also having that wonderful social connection through it too, through our sport.
I mean, the other thing in my sort of brief sort of flurry in athletics was the great thing was, as you say there, you have both sexes training together. But the other thing I found that was really interesting is there is a real sort of, I suppose it's built in that everyone will help each other. So if they see something wrong with your technique, it's not sort of keep it to the sexes. Everyone will muck in and try and help each other.
Yeah, and I guess when you're doing all your sort of conditioning training and the likes, you know, you get the throwers train with the jumpers, train with the sprinters and the likes, and you're all in the gym together and it does become quite communal, which is lovely. But and also, you know, the other thing with athletics is there's something for every shape and size, which is really a great reflection of society as well. So those things are really fantastic. And we have really been trying to capitalize on the things that make athletics very unique and the set of characteristics that only athletics can deliver and delineates it from many other sports. You know, it's around human endeavour and it's probably one of the cheapest sports to ever be involved in. And in harsh economic times, that's a fantastic attraction to a lot of parents in particular. It's a sport that everyone can relate to. Everyone's run, jumped, rolled, thrown or walked, as we like to say. It's a sport with anyone with a disability. It's very easy to get involved in. And they're the types of things as we rebranded last year to Australian Athletics that we're really trying to emphasise that this really is a sport for everyone. And, you know, certainly in Australia, and I would suggest most of this countries, in fact, most of the globe does athletics, 216 countries are members of the World Athletic Federation or World Athletics. And it is a sport that everyone relates to. Everyone's tried to run as fast as they can or throw something as far as they can or jump as high or as long as they can. And they're the things that we're trying to, you know, almost change the definition of what an athlete is. And certainly in Australian athletics, which we are now, it's really important for us to be super inclusive, all genders, all body shapes and sizes, all abilities, and just, you know, have a go. Anyone that runs and jumps and throws is one of us.
I find it interesting that you've highlighted that fact that you can be all shapes and sizes, because so many sports now have actually moved away from that, where the first one that comes to mind is rugby union, where, you know, that really was for all shapes and sizes. But now they're all pretty much the same size and all what they call superb athletes. Now, and I know there's a lot of people get upset that the word athlete is being used as a sort of general term in so many other sports. How do you feel as a sport that really is about athletes when that happens?
Look, I think that's why we're considered the foundation sport for all land sports, running, jumping and throwing, because they're a combination of all of the above. And if you want to be that athlete in inverted commas, that superb athlete, well, you have to be able to do all of those things to a very high degree. And the basis for that, and that's where we would say, even if you're a rugby player, to do in the off-season athletics, learn how to run properly, you know, plyometrics, a whole series of those skills that come in elite athletics are transferable, obviously without the specifics, but to other sports. And there are many, many people we talk to over here, there is a guy that used to work at the Swans AFL Academy that is now looking for ways for all the boys and girls that don't make the Swans, and only a couple of them get a contract a year. What other sports can they go to? And we go, well, we'll have them in athletics, you know, because we can help them run, jump and throw even better than what they might do in that other sport. And, you know, the Olympics again for us is a great lure to hopefully start taking some of that talent that we may have even nurtured as young, really young kids, but take them back from those sports that they may not get in, that they may not have the same social connection with both genders. They may not have that same ability to travel internationally and compete internationally, but we can help deliver that to them.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because when we spoke to Brian, he was saying that one of the problems you face is you create these athletes and then they're stolen by other sports. But it sounds interesting now that you're going out there and trying to lure them back to your sport. So is that difficult, or is it proving very successful because you have that Olympic carrot?
Well, that Olympic carrot is absolutely one of those things. And it's been a very interesting to watch the development of young athletes like Lockie Kennedy and Gout and even some of the women that have, some of those other sports have tried to lure them away from athletics and they haven't gone. And so that Olympic carrot is absolutely one of those. And certainly when I was competing, a lot of the men in particular were targeted by AFL clubs, and most of them said they chose athletics because they wanted to go to the Olympics. And to go to a home Olympics is even more alluring. But also, because we are such a massive global sport, I would suggest that somebody like a Gout, or if we go to a Noah Lyles or to a Usain Bolt or to a series of our other global stars, they would earn way more money, if that's what the lure is. They would earn way more money on an international stage than any AFL player in Australia, because it's a bigger market and they have, you know, the likes of Nike and Asics and all those sporting brands, and then we'll have all of the Olympic brands that will come in behind a whole lot of those Olympic track and field athletes in particular, or athletics, because we're the biggest sport at the Olympic Games, we're the global sport, all of those things I just spoke of, you know, the fact that we have all the countries, that we are, you know, very socially inclusive, gender inclusive, you know, I think all of those things add to the fact that our sport is actually way more valuable because of those platforms and what we represent. And so some of those young kids that might be tossing it up, I'd be throwing the dice and I'd be rolling it on athletics.
I mean, one of the things obviously that you face the challenges is to keep that youth coming through and to keep attracting people. But what must really help is the success that you had at the Paris Olympic Games. And now we're seeing success in the Diamond League. And to me, the Diamond League has really regenerated athletics. It came along at the right time. It's managed to showcase it and show it in a really good, healthy light. And because athletics was struggling and it sort of disappeared from TV screens and even in the newspapers. But do you agree that this now has really helped keep it going and the momentum leading into the Olympic Games and World Championships?
Yeah, I think it has. And I think one of the other things, certainly not necessarily only just from an international perspective, but from a domestic perspective, it's been fantastic for us. The other thing that's happened with us is that we had the most amazing Olympic Games, but then we also had this awesome World Junior Championship result 3 weeks later. Not many people hear about that, but we finished second on the medal tally in terms of the number of medals that we won behind the US. And then we went and did that again at the World Indoor Championships as well. We won the second most medals behind the US. And at the juniors, we had 28 finalists. Like, that is crazy in terms of what Australia is doing. And finally, we've got to the stage where I think mainstream Australia is paying attention to athletics. And, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but somebody that's within our organisation, and I'm not going to name his name because I don't want him to be under too much pressure, but he actually said he thinks that Australia could win the men's 4x100-metre relay in LA. Like, that would be the most crazy performance. So I can't imagine any other performance at the Olympic Games by an Australian, it wouldn't matter what it was in any other sport, would beat our men's 4x100 meters winning a gold medal. You know, like, really unbelievably exciting. And the depth that we have at the moment is super exciting as well. And, you know, we know that people like Gout played football. He played soccer, or real football, as I like to call it.
I agree.
And, you know, they were trying to keep these kids, and now they're all going, oh, my God, imagine going to the Olympics and running in a medal-winning 4x100-metre relay. There's not a chance in hell they would go back to one of those football codes now. And that's sort of the excitement that comes with that. And we have this incredible group of juniors that will be the guts of our Olympic team in 7 years, and, in fact, the guts of our sport for the next 10 to 15 years, including a couple of superstar young girls from WA that we found, that we kind of, the rest of Australia found over the national championships, that were just incredible, you know, breaking Raylene Boyle's 50-year-old record in the 100 metres, and Emily Reid, 14-year-old girl, the run the time she ran in the 200 metres was just crazy for a 14-year-old. So it's stuff for us.
There would be nothing better than to beat the Americans in that race on their own soil. I think the whole world would love us for that.
Well, interestingly, our men's 4x1 broke our national record about 2 months ago. And they broke the time they ran would have got them fifth at the Olympic Games. And it was only, not that I was a commentator and I'm statistic bound, it was only half a second behind the gold medal performance. That 4x100-metre team did not have Gout or Rowan Browning in it.
Wow.
So, you know, when we start to look at another 3 years of development of that group of young male sprinters, and actually the women are doing almost as well. So it is really exciting. At the World Junior Championships, every one of our relay teams finished in the top three. So, you know, it's a very exciting time for us, and it's a really – the thing I love about athletics, it's just a great physical, social community sport that is really inclusive. So it's cuts across socio-demographic barriers, as I said, global barriers, gender barriers, disability barriers. And so it's an all-encompassing, welcoming sport.
I mean, listening to that, and the future does look rosy and bright, but we know what the media's like in Australia. You've experienced it. They love to jump on a bandwagon. And I mean, is it Australian Athletics' job to manage those expectations, to try and temper them down? Because if I use as an example, I'm very worried with Gout that, yes, he's smashing everything. He's getting a lot of headlines. And I just worry that people might turn on him if he doesn't have the success that everyone's building him up to for us all to expect him to get.
Yeah, I think that happens with any teenage prodigy. I don't think it matters what sport you're in. And it's a tough road to travel. And, you know, Brian, being a sports psychologist, would have dealt with a lot of those and the pressures and the things that come with it. The great thing, I think, around Gout is that he is a highly intelligent young man. He's one of seven children, and I love that. Anyone that's from a big family knows it keeps you pretty grounded, your siblings, you know, but it's not just him. There is this sort of list of co-stars as well. So hopefully we can dissipate the pressure that would be on one particular person. The expectations, the one thing that I do know is most elite athletes I know usually have greater expectations of themselves than any external party. What we do need to do is make sure this is a long game. To be successful in athletics, it's the most competitive sport in the world. There are three entries from every country allowed to participate. In swimming, there's only two. In rowing, there's one. In basketball, there's one. 216 countries all around the world, more than members of the United Nations, more than participate at the Olympic Games. It's highly competitive. So you can be winning 1 week. In fact, you can be winning at the start of an Olympic campaign and losing at the end of it. Just ask Noah Lyles, you know. So it's really highly competitive, and to dominate any event in our sport for any period of time is extraordinary. So someone like Usain Bolt, who dominated the sprints for 8 years at an Olympic level, is just, that's why he's, you know, the greatest sprinter we've ever had, other than being the fastest human that's ever been on the earth. But so it is terribly competitive. So I think from that perspective, we need to try and help continue to educate the general public. But I would also say that when I look back even to Tokyo and the ratings for the Olympic Games, 6 of the top 10 pieces of ratings for Channel 7 were all athletics. So Peter Bowles, 4th in the 800 final, was one of the top two. And you'd be going, well, fantastic. They were celebrating the fact that he was almost going to become fourth, because it is a rare, it is a very rare place to win a medal at the Olympic level in our sport. And, you know, hats off to Nina Kennedy and our six other Olympic medalists from Paris, because we all know how difficult this is. The, as I've already mentioned, the most competitive sport you can ever be involved in.
Yeah, you mentioned that. And again, part of the success or the way of reaching that success is managing your training, the races you participate in, the events you participate in. Does that, I mean, the fact that we're a little bit limited in how much we can have in Australia, is that something that you feel holds you back or maybe them? Like what I'm thinking about is whether you could have a sort of Australian championships where you go to more than one city in the year. I mean, is that feasible or is it not really feasible in the way the athletes perform today?
Well, no, I think it is, because even if you have a look domestically, if we had a gold or a bronze or a world athletic category meet in nearly every capital city. And we grow up dealing with that. So we grow up knowing that we peak or have a sort of 90% peak during our domestic season. And then we have to peak 6 months later. And if anything, we've become very good at that and we understand how that works. And then most of our, you know, medal potential athletes go to Europe and compete in the Diamond League. And again, they're used to traveling and being based overseas for quite a period of time. If anything, it may build some more resilience, we hope, and that we've, you know, there are pathways that now allow you to perceive that as being, it's normalized. So you start going to a World Juniors and you learn about the training camps and you know you've got a peak off season for us, you know, in our winter. You know, and obviously it has its challenges, but I think we've become very good at dealing with those challenges and understanding how they work. And if anything, we look at that as going, what an advantage when we get to somewhere like Brisbane, when all of a sudden everybody else has to travel for 24 hours to get to Australia to compete. And that is something that we've become experts at. I think, you know, I am a natural optimist, and I believe that that's, you know, almost we can use that and turn our mindset around to that being one of our advantages.
Ashley, I know you said that obviously we talk about Gout and other high profile names like that, but I think the thing that's changed now is there is a proverbial conveyor belt of talent around now for us. So on the weekend, you mentioned the second Diamond League event of the year happened in China, and Sarah Billings smashed her PB in the 800 meters. So she came second, got a silver. She was on the podium. Sarah would, with all due respect, Sarah wouldn't be regarded as a household name, I don't think, in Australia. She would be in athletics, but not to the general public. But the fact that she can go over there and do that work, Sarah's probably, I'm going to say, about 27 years old now. This is not, you don't become an overnight success, really, in athletics. That's been a long, old trip. She was on the world junior team. That must have been 2014 with Nina Kennedy back in the day, wherever they were. I can't remember now. But, so it's a grind. But she pops up, flies up to China, gets there, you know, does a huge PB, smashes it after having done all the travel and all that, and is right up there. So suddenly she's a contender. Probably most generalist sports fans in Australia have never heard that name before, but she's in the mix. And I think that's what's fantastic at the moment with athletics at the moment. It isn't just the odd high jumper or the odd pole vaulter. We've got some depth now, which possibly we haven't had, well, probably ever before.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I think that's the great thing, is it's not just one event where we've seen these names pop up. But is there now sort of almost like you're faced with not only having to sort of educate the public, but dare I say, because the media these days is so splintered, and I think some of them are very butterfly-ish in that they just flip from one thing to the other. They lack that understanding and knowledge as well. So are you having to almost educate them about the athletes and exactly what you just said there, Brian, that this wasn't an overnight success. This has been something that's been coming for a number of years.
Yeah, look, I think that it's funny. I know that at the National Championships in Perth, which were a roaring success, and you know, I took a photograph of saying that people, the grandstand was full, you're going to have to go somewhere else to watch. And our CEO, Simon Hollingsworth, bumped into a journalist from The Guardian. And he said, oh, I went to your Moree plant meet, which, by the way, sold out 2 days before the meet. And he said, and then after the Moree plant meet, I was supposed to go to Adelaide for the AFL gather round, but my editor told me I couldn't go there. I had to come to Perth to go to the national championships. So, you know what, we're hoping that that happens. And there are some very, very experienced athletics media that I reckon will get there, be in that press box, in that, you know, in the tribunes. They'll be making sure that those guys know what they're doing. You know, there will be those that are sort of interlope onto their space that try and get there, but there are some that are very, very experienced. But you know what, sometimes it's nice to have a different perspective too. You know, it doesn't always have to be done like the expert, and that's part of the nature of sport. And we actually quite like the idea of being off the sports pages or out of the genuine sports media and having some people that now become kind of the stars. And as Brian alluded to, I think we're going to have a plethora of them because of the depth of what's going on. And any given season between now and in the lead up to the Olympics, we could have somebody, again, like what happened at national championships, that pops up that we've just never heard of, or like Sarah has been training for years and years, and all of a sudden it's all clicked for her and she just goes ahead in leaps and bounds. It's a bit like what happened with Jess Hull, actually, over the last 3 years. You know, in Tokyo, we're going, oh, great, she made a final. Well, who would have thought 3 years later she's, like, run the second fastest time in the world ever in the 1500 metres to get a silver medal?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about, obviously, the athletes now and how it's been a long path, some of them, to get to that point. But I look at you guys behind the scenes, because obviously there are those people that are employed by Australian Athletics. But the board must have really worked hard behind the scenes for us to be in this situation now. I mean, I just wonder how many hours you guys put in per week.
Don't even go there for me. Well, you know, today I've probably done a 8 to 9. It's not my day. My day won't finish till 9 p.m. tonight. I'll be off my last high-performance committee meeting at 9 p.m. if it doesn't go over time. And, you know, the fact that I'm sitting here in my car doing this and not probably indicative of what it's like. It truly, in the role of president, it's like a full-time job, really. And our board is highly intelligent, highly skilled. Yes, the organisation has absolutely stabilized and professionalized in a really fantastic manner over the last 5 years that I've been on the board. And that is fantastic. I think, you know, we hit the jackpot last July when Simon Hollingsworth, who's a two-time Olympian, Rhodes Scholar, qualified lawyer, was the CEO of the Australian Sports mm-hmm. Commission. Like, I could continue on with his CV. He's come back to the sport to run our sport. You know, highly considered, thoughtful thinker. And, you know, so we have some, the blocks are kind of there, but this is to make a very, very strong foundation for our sport to go forward, not just to Brisbane. We need to put, you know, the systems in place, everything in place to go, you know, for the next 10, 15, 20 years for what, when we're all going to be well and truly gone, mm-hmm. but that will be what sets the sport up for the next 50 years.
Well, I congratulate all of you, and I think it's fantastic to watch. As someone who actually loves athletics, it's just great to see Australia coming back. So congratulations, and thanks so much for your time and catching up with us today.
Yeah, you're more than welcome, Ashley. Thank you for your interest. We love it. We love an Aths fan.
Thanks, Ashley.
Hi, I'm Samir Dutt, Olympian hockey player. You're watching on me, not the footy show.
Well, that was Jane Fleming and Brian Miller from Australian Athletics. And I think you'll hear the passion in Jane's voice, like how much she still absolutely loves the sport. And I think it's great how they've managed to turn it around. As I said, Lord Coe managed to reintroduce the interest with the Diamond League in Europe. That sort of lifted it. It got TV coverage. And now to see it in Australia, and we're bringing athletes through that are now contenders, I think is really fantastic. Really, really exciting as well.
Oh, for sure. And athletics is certainly having a rebirth in this country.
I mean, I love my athletics. I've got to be honest. I have always enjoyed watching it. That, to me, is what the Olympic Games are all about.
I thought that Australian athletics was expecting a bit of a bounce after the Sydney Olympics. Now, I'm sure they got a little bit. We had some really good performances athletically at the Sydney Olympics, you know, Kathy, obviously, but there was a high jumper, Stephen Hooker.
Yeah, pole vaulter.
Which one was the high jumper at?
There was Gregory Over as well in the pole vault. I've forgotten a Christian name.
But it seemed like that was going to be a little bit of a springboard, but it didn't really seem to take off, whereas this seems like it's the groundswell's a bit, it's a genuine groundswell as opposed to a generated groundswell by an Olympic Games. It seems that this is just organically growing.
I think the interesting thing was, as they were saying, that what we're seeing or we think is overnight success is not really overnight success. These guys have been competing for a long time, but the encouraging thing is there's another generation coming through behind them. And I think that's what you're saying, John, is after Sydney, it didn't seem that we had that generation following on behind them. The great thing is they're there now. And it was quite interesting to hear, because Brian had moaned when he was on the podcast before after the Olympic Games that they were losing athletes to other sports, but now they're actually looking to pinch them from other sports. So that's great to hear. I mean, if you take it, as they said in the interview, Gout was playing soccer and then decided, or football, and wanted to change and is, well, look what he's achieving now.
Yeah, I'll mention Gout in a minute. One thing that did catch my eye, and it was when you were talking about Australian athletics and Athletics Australia. That just does my head in. I'm sorry, nothing against the people involved or whatever. It happens in all sports, but how much do you reckon they paid for that? You know what we'll do? We'll put the first word second and the second word first. Right, book that in. Invoice them. Just like, and what empirical difference does that make? Does that change make? Does it change people's perceptions of the organisation?
I know. Well, we may get Jane Fleming may email me and tell us why it happened.
So it's not
the thoughts behind it.
Yeah, it just strikes me as.
Look, we had it with Football Australia. You know, it was Football Federation of Australia. Now it's just Football Australia.
Oh, and I'll bang on for years about hockey. WAHA, West Australian Hockey Association. We live in the acronym society. What a web address. waha.com.au or whatever. Perfect. No, we'll call ourselves Hockey WA. It changed nothing.
But then New South Wales is New South Wales Hockey, so they've got it round the other way.
Yeah.
So yet it was supposedly meant to be all uniform, the logos were all going to be the same, and marketers, they're brilliant salespeople.
I've got nothing against Australian athletics, but then again, I had nothing against Athletics Australia. So it happens. It's what happens in sport, I guess.
It is indeed.
You know when you get one of those reviews happen and you get the marketing people come in and that's what happens. Now, let's stay with Gout and athletics for a minute.
Okay.
We recently had the Stall Gift.
Great event. One of the true, brilliant historical events in Australia.
And you know what? I think it has a true historical place worldwide. In a greater...
Yeah. Amongst the running community.
It is unique. Huge.
Yeah.
Very unique. And... it's one of the reasons it makes it unique is it's a what, Ashley?
A handicap race.
Handicap race. That's where if you're really, really fast, they make you start from a little bit further back.
Yeah. I could have done with that when I was a kid.
You know what? Not the only sport. Happens in golf.
Yep.
It's a part of golf. They have handicap tournaments in golf.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at a lot of the Paralympic sports, you know, the athletes are given points and you're only allowed so many points on the court, you know, for like wheelchair rugby, wheelchair basketball.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a handicapping system there, which is to make the competition even.
Now, we recently, at the recent Store Gift, Gout was performing there alongside, and the guy's name the fella that beat him the week before in Melbourne was racing as well. They were both there. So the two fastest men in Australia at Store. Racing. They didn't make the final. The Melbourne media just about melted. Oh, terrible. You get these guys in and they don't make the final and it's just an opportunity lost. And oh, what were you thinking? Why didn't you just change the rules? I've never heard such a load of drivel. Honestly, it's a handicap event. Everybody knows it's a handicap event.
But also that's true sport. Not that's always right. Your marketing dream will make it through to the final.
And everybody knew that going in there. A lot of these people are also the ones that say things like, oh, you can't change the rules halfway through the season. Because, and yet here you are demanding that the rules get changed halfway through a meet. You know what? They didn't make it, but someone did.
Yeah.
And you know what?
Give them the credit.
Exactly. He was described as a school teacher by one of these commentators, as though that's something lower, as though, oh, he's just a school teacher. Come on, give me a break. Give the guy the credit he deserves. I mean, honestly, when one of your favourite commentator mates, all of you Eastern States-based people, Mr. Richardson, who did win one, he beat blokes running on a handicap to win that.
Yeah, look, I would say if they're from the sport we don't mention on this show, I would say, look, if you want to stop, you know, having the little helping your players, just get rid of the behind area. And actually see if someone could score a proper goal like in other sports and stop giving a point for people for missing.
Yeah.
I mean, it would change a lot of results because a lot of teams miss a lot and hit the post and you don't get anything in any other sport for missing or hitting a post. Nothing.
No. I tend to agree with you on that. But, you know, leave the stall gift alone. It's what it's the institution it is because of the way it's run and the rules that you have to abide by. You know what? They didn't make it. No one thinks any less of Gout Gout because he didn't make the final of the school.
Absolutely. Look, in a way, I think it was probably good that he didn't because again, he's become this darling of the media and I think we've got to control that. As I said in the interview, I've got grave concerns that they're going to slam him if he doesn't say win a gold in Los Angeles. The same media that's pumping him up now will turn on him. And we saw it in the Euro 2020s when, you know, England made it through to the final, lost in a penalty shootout to, Italy. And the black players that missed, that had been heroes for England throughout the tournament, suddenly were told to go home where they came from, even though, you know, they were born in Britain. And you just think that, I don't like that racial thing full stop, and I don't want to see that happen to someone like Gout Gout because I think the impact it would have on sport here in Australia would be unbelievable. So it worries me, and that's why I think in a way it's good that he didn't win this time. If he wins next year, fantastic.
Now, while we're talking about cheerleaders in the media, Tony Cochran was interviewed recently on the Waitley show, and it was in the wash-up to the announcement of the new Brisbane Stadium that we'll be hosting.
Yes.
Now, Tony, for those of you who don't know, I think he used to run V8 Supercars. He was involved with the Gold Coast Suns, an AFL team. And he's been around the sports block. I think he had something to do with Melbourne Storm in there for a while, maybe. Anyway, sports-wise, he's done some yards. Tony appeared on the Waitley show to go through the announcement of the new Brisbane Stadium, and he was gushing over the
interesting
Olympic
he chooses league. An AFL show to go on.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Especially when they announced the Olympic legacy for Brisbane will be an AFL stadium that has a few cricket matches at it.
An AFL? I don't seem to remember it ever being a part of the games.
No, I don't think cricket has been either.
Cricket was a long time ago
I
think. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's Brisbane's Olympic legacy is going to be an AFL stadium. I think that's disgraceful. And it's even worse that Mr. Cochran was
shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Celebrating the fact that that was going to be an Olympic legacy. Really? So all the sports that are actually in the Olympics, their venues are going to get a paint job and maybe some new carpet.
Yeah.
And some sports aren't even going to get anything. They're just going to have, using the same facilities they've always used.
Go swim in the river, you know.
Yeah, well, the canoeists aren't too happy about the planned site for that, are they? But why? It just struck me as such a bad, bad decision.
Look, and there's so many bad decisions with this games. And I mean, I've been saying all along, I really, really am concerned that it ain't going to happen, that we're not going to pull it off. Or if we do, I think that Brisbane is going to be in debt for unbelievable amount of time. But I think the LA Games are going to be very interesting as to how much of a future the Olympic Games have.
And during this conversation, it also became clear that they really didn't consider it. The way that other sports were spoken about during this interview was like, oh, well, you know, they'll get so much out of it. What? Out of an AFL field. That's what it is.
Well, take a look here in Western Australia, this state-of-the-art Optus Stadium that, you know, we as taxpayers paid for them to create. We had a premier that told us that this was going to bring everything. Sporting events would be held here. Concerts would be here. And then we pay for them all. The government pays for all these events to be held here. Even when it's the Tri-Nations Rugby, they pay money to Rugby Australia for the game to be played here. When Yeah, the grand final when the AFL was here. The government paid for it to be here.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
What about all those retractable seats so you can watch the watch the rugby? Remember, we'll be having rugby games soon. You'll be right up again. It'll be like a rectangular stadium.
Well, that was unfeasible, remember? We were told when we had an interview with those concerned.
It wasn't unfeasible when they were selling the idea to us, was it?
No.
As soon as they had to actually stand by something, it all went and disappeared.
Well, I think I've said on this show before, I've been to Optus to watch rectangular sport. It is abysmal.
Yeah, I've seen.
And I will not be going back. And you know how much I love my football and my rugby, but I will not go back there because I'm not going to go to somewhere where it's so far away and it's just an awful place to watch rectangular sport.
Yep, absolutely. I would agree. I've been there for events and, it's terrible for those rectangular, especially the lower down the seating you go, the worse it gets.
Oh, it's horrendous. Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, Optus Stadium is just another big concrete building. I mean, I know, it's pretty from the outside and it's got flashlights and, you know, the Indians love the beads. That's the way I think of it.
Well, we should probably close off soon, but just before we do, John, I just want to say just a little credit to a guy I played sport with at Subiaco United for, I think it was about 10 years, and Steve Wood was my trusty left back for a very long time, and we won the league together, and he's the first player in that league winning team. I think it was in 92 or 93, I forget, time goes by and you forget what year things happen, but he's the first of our team to pass away. And my thoughts are with him, his family, and obviously a very special friend, and just sad that he is no longer with us.
Some people are on the fence, they think it's all over.
See ya. We'll be back next week.